Hey everyone, welcome to Articulate Warbling with Laura and Zach. This is episode, I'm not quite sure, it's somewhere in the 30s, but Laura and Zach are going to be talking about Disney Plus. So, look for the show notes for the full title. And here we go. Thank you for listening to Articulate Warbling.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Articulate Warbling with me, Zach, with
Laura.
Today is going to be a Disney Plus special, meaning we're basically going to review everything that we've watched so far on Disney Plus. Yeah, we can easily do that because we don't have much to say about Mary Poppins Returns, all except...
We watched the first 20 minutes and it was shite.
It was like the biggest load of shit ever. That's our review done. We're quite late to the game when it comes to The Mandalorian, but I think we'll have enough things to talk about.
Do you know what really annoys me? Is that people haven't even seen The Mandalorian and probably don't even know about The Mandalorian, yet have bought so much in the way of merchandise, i.e. Baby Yoda.
Well, the thing is, that was spoiled for us, because they got The Mandalorian before us by about 4 months.
I'm not talking about America. I'm talking about people in England. I know people that have bought the toy...
That's what I mean, but...
Baby Yoda.
Everyone did that before it was even made available in the UK,
They don't even know it's there.
Exactly.
They don't even know it's in existence.
They don't even know what it's for, generally.
Yeah.
They just know the memes of Baby Yoda. Like, titty! That one where he's holding out his hand and he's going, titty!
But it's not the meme. They've actually bought a toy of Baby Yoda.
Not where it comes from.
And people genuinely think that it's just because Yoda... They've tried to, like, cash in on more money and have made Yoda, but in baby form. And I'm like, no, that's actually from The Mandalorian.
A cynic would think that. But no, we finally got around to watching The Mandalorian. We'll go into that. We've just come away from watching a film quite recently, just now, about 3 minutes ago. It just ended. Should we start the podcast with that?
Yeah, okay.
That review.
Okay.
Do you want me to get the Ronin to back up?
Yeah.
Do you want to keep started?
Okay, yeah, so we've just watched the live-action version of The Jungle Book. Now, The Jungle Book is probably one of the best and my ultimate favourite Disney movies of all time. And cut a long story short, Zach was watching some special features of The Mandalorian and was talking over and over and over about... What's his name?
John Favreau.
And I'm like, yeah, okay, all right, to be fair, he's okay, he's pretty good, blah, blah, blah.
No, not just that. The thing is, he's good-looking, and you thought, I'll give this good-looking a chance, because you did reflect and go, well, John Favreau, he is a looker.
I did. I do think he is a looker. Okay, fair enough. However, I don't care how good or bad-looking someone is, it doesn't actually reflect... their ability to make a good film.
But you felt you put it off long enough.
No, I figured that I'd never hear the end of it if I didn't even try. So
I wonder who that would be from. Not
basically,
me.
Zach said to me, oh my God, if you like Jon Favreau, you should watch The Jungle Book, the live action one. And I'm like, nope. And he's like, why not? And I'm like, because Jungle Book is my favourite Disney movie. I'm not going to ruin it, okay? And
you're not going to ruin it for yourself.
No, I don't want to ruin it for myself. But Zach was like, but it's been directed by Jon Favreau, which means absolutely nothing.
No, my point also was you can't judge it until you see it, and it will never, ever stale what that original is for you. It won't.
I mean, Zach's idea was, oh, you'll really like it, it won't ruin it, it will be great.
Well, I came out in 2016 and gave it 5 stars. After watching it today, I'll give it lower.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
It's not as amazing as I initially thought. It's different when you're on the big screen and it's the first time you saw it. It went from a 5-star film to a 4-star film.
Okay.
So it's still a recommend. It's still a great film. But Laura watched it and I think the only complaint throughout the movie was... What's the snake's name? Car.
I had 2 complaints. First of all... Car was a man and is now Scarlett Johansson.
Well, you could barely call it a man. It was a Winnie the Pooh voice actor and it was campy as shit.
That's fine.
And wacky as shit.
That's fine. That was the whole point.
I know. Well, I'm not criticising it. We had this conversation while we were watching the film.
And, you know, cue Car's performance, which is literally about a minute long, and in the original is far longer than that. And everything in the original is like before everything. To the point that actually when saying his name is Carr, he's like Scar, which makes no sense whatsoever. Scarlett Johansson, yeah, I like her, but not right for this. And also, just no. Just no. And Baloo was massively disappointing for me.
I thought you were...
No, there were things where I was like, yeah, okay.
You said specifically, if the comedy goes the way that I think it is, maybe.
Yeah. And it did, but not up to the expectation I wanted it to.
It's never going to live up to that initial cartoon.
I'm sure the songs weren't that bad in the original.
No, they weren't.
Exactly. So...
But this isn't trying to do that. It is trying to
but
cash
it is.
In.
It's but cashing it is.
In. Yes, well,
don't cash in on a fantastic, phenomenal original if you are not going to make it absolutely phenomenally original.
Well, that's what they felt they were doing by doing it something different
it
from
it.
Taking the music. This isn't a world where everything's photorealistic and it's grounded in reality, in quotation marks. I understand that gritty, realistic sensibility that they're going for, pushing technology and all of that juiciness. I get that. There have been live-action adaptations of classics like Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, which... We haven't spoke about it. Have we spoke about it? We have. Well, I love Guy Ritchie's Aladdin. I absolutely loved it. And that is a perfect balance of encapsulating Aladdin, which was quite a somber, dark tone, even in the cartoon. But it had that campy, kitsch stylings. Now, Jon Favreau could have given himself room to make it a little bit campy, a little bit out there. You know, you have to withhold disbelief with any of these types of films, but they went for a more mature, in quotation marks, edge to it. I like that they naturally progressed the musical cues into the score, actually attributing the music to Baloo the Bear. It didn't work. It didn't work for me, that song. The classic rhythmic beat rhythm of... not that one. The Bare Necessities. The one with Christopher Walken playing the King Louis, that worked because it was in tone with the character. Also, it felt natural. I know what you mean. If you can't live up to that standard of the music and that tone, don't include it at all. Maybe through the cues of the score like they did, which is quite impacting, and it does do something manipulative with John Debney's score where it pulls your chords of nostalgia, but it doesn't live up to that overall heightened emotion you get from these musical pieces that you so love from the cartoon.
But if you listen very, very carefully to the score during the time that King Louis is chasing after Mowgli, you'll notice that the tune is exactly the same as the song from Aladdin, which is really strange. You know the Alibaba song?
Yep.
It's exactly the same.
Is it?
And as they were playing it, and I'm like, Alibaba. And I'm like, huh?
But the tune, the tune and that swell is very similar to do 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 do. And what John Debney's done is he's orchestrated it to be big and epic and layering it with his own take on it to be thematically, tonally right in that sequence. So it's obviously come across a little bit as something from Aladdin.
Yep.
It's a film that, on its own merits, do you like it? Did you enjoy it?
If it was a film that had been created and the original was not out there, it would be a 5-star film, 100% fantastic. But because I have such loyalty to the original, because that is what I grew up on, I've got a frigging pillow with it on, for Christ's sakes.
VHS tape.
I've got it on VHS.
We share in... I had exactly the same one. Of the same generation, where I used to repeatedly watch at my hands.
Exactly.
We grew up with these VHS tapes that were handed down to us or were got for us. We're of the generation where we were Disney kids, weren't we, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
We grew up in this stuff, whereas a lot of other people now are of the generation where they grew up with Pixar films of the era of, i.e., say, Cars, or even Ratatouille, or even the later ensemble pieces.
Yeah.
We were... catered to in the sense that we were quite spoilt for choice. We had a lot there. They are cashing in on that. They are doing it wrong and right at the same time with different properties. I felt Aladdin was just worthwhile. It had enough Guy Ritchie-isms. It had enough heart. It had enough respect and homage from what came before. But they just did a sensational job with that. I felt that Tim Burton did the best of his abilities with Dumbo. I felt the Jungle Book, for what it was and what it was going for, good. But if anyone wants to watch a Jungle Book film quite unlike anything else, there's a movie on Netflix by Andy Serkis, and it's called Mowgli. It is a 12A in America, PG-13, very dark take, an actual direct adaptation of the novels, and it is great. What they've used with, and I know what you mean, if this came out and the Jungle Book didn't exist as an original Disney piece, you'd go, yeah, that's really good. But because it's coming from a source material a lot of people have an affinity for and a love for, it won't live up to that. But not only will it live up to that, whilst they're trying to be original and true to their own vision, they are leaning too hard on certain aspects of it, whereas I should have just let it go. Also, this movie stopped Andy Serkis's movie from going to be theatrically released and was postponed for years on end when it was just shoved on Netflix. I was pissed off about that, but there's no denying Jon Favreau is in this new critical stage of his career where he's going the George Lucas route. He is focusing on the expansion of technology, and in a lot of ways that expansion of the technology found within the Jungle Book and what he did with The Lion King in the special features to The Mandalorian, he has translated that and evolved it and crafted it to such an extent that it benefits the Mandalorian. So without the Jungle Book or the Lion King preceding this, we wouldn't have the Mandalorian, really. But anyway, I will give the Jungle Book 2016 Jon Favreau's quite good adaptation, where it just had a little bit of its either lean hard on it being a general heartfelt adaptation, or lean enough away that it can live off on its own original thing. And I know I said originally, look at this as its own isolated piece. You make a good point, Laura. It's very fucking difficult to view it like that when it comes from...
You can't. This is the thing. I really liked the live-action version of Dumbo, okay? I really liked the original version, but the original will always hold a piece of my heart because I was young and I was a Disney kid. And that's the thing. I liked the new Dumbo, but I preferred the original. I liked this Jungle Book, but I prefer the original. Aladdin is different. I didn't really like the original when I was younger, but now... Now we've got the new live-action version. It's much better. I much prefer it. So it depends on what holds
Sleep
apart.
Sleeping Beauty, though, you couldn't get through.
No, Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast, that's
Beauty
it.
Beauty and the Beast, I couldn't
Sleep
get
Sleeping
through.
Beauty, they did as Maleficent.
Lion King, I have tried 4 times to see the original, and I can't. I just can't get into it. So there's no point in me watching the new one.
But what if you... But I think it might help. You having not been engaged with the original, not found a standing for it, maybe this Jon Favreau version might be the one that grips you.
Maybe, but we'll see. Anyway, I find it really hard when there are new adaptations of old original films. And the reason why I find that so hard is because even though people can tell me to their heart's content until they're blue in the face that it's not about the money, it feels like it's about the money. It feels like it's like, oh, we made a really smashing film way back in the 1990s. Now we're going to redo it.
Or the 1940s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s.
And we're going to, and now we're going to redo it so that we can just literally milk the very last bits of money we can get out of this. And that is the thing I really do struggle with this, is the fact that it does. It just feels like a money-making procedure, and I don't like it. And there are some of the newer films that I do like, and I'm not going to like shit upon them all, but what I'm saying is it does feel like it's like, oh, yeah, we made a smashing original. Let's milk some more money out of it. And that frustrates the hell out of me, because for me, whether that is a naive thought or not, for me, a Disney movie originally was made to entertain children. And now it just feels like it's... I mean, they're clever in the sense that they try to entertain the adults as well, rather than, poor mums and dads and carers and grandparents and whatever happen to go and watch this film and they're like, oh, God,
well,
90 minutes.
Well, there's a truth behind that as well, because we have a great affinity for a movie called The Tigger Movie, and for nostalgia's sake, we wanted to watch it. We could not bear it.
No.
Because it is catering to a certain minority. Yeah. It really is. And we couldn't get through it because it was just... It's some of all its parts. It's cringeworthy and it's quite bad for the kids. I understand it.
As a kid, I absolutely adored that film. It's one of my favourites.
Yeah.
But as an adult, it's really difficult to watch because it's boring, because it's for children.
And they've done that as well, haven't they? They've done Christopher Robin, a live-action adaptation of the Winnie the Pooh thing.
And I do get that. And I think it is smart to make it, adaptable for children and for adults.
There's bits that you can laugh at. You know, in Aladdin, you can really laugh at the way Will Smith is at times. And he is a fantastic actor in that sense. He's good in this character. But the thing is that I just really struggle to get over the fact that I just feel like it's milking money out of something that was made and that should just be left where it is. It should be left as a masterpiece, as something that will continue in time.
It's a money maker,
because
it's not as a masterpiece, yeah. It should be left alone as that. And a lot of people had that feeling about Star Wars, but the thing is, this is a great... There's a differentiation. Star Wars was always built as a franchise, as this huge thing that
could
expand out.
Yeah, it's not like they suddenly went, oh, wait, I can do better now.
And they did. They've also, this theme of doing sequels, it's not a new thing. People are going, Disney has this new infatuation of making everything a live action adaptation. Disney is notorious for going, oh, do you know The Jungle Book, the film we did years ago? Shall we just do a sequel 40 years in the future from the original release, number two? And shall we just release that? Should it be direct to DVD? In their ideal world, they would go, no, we want it theatrically released. But they did. They released it. And you saw loads of... like, Aladdin has four sequels. Half of them I've never seen or heard of. So
it wasn't until you downloaded Disney Plus did I realise that there are sequels to so many phenomenal originals.
And that those like... There is one that we've both also got an affinity for, but you probably won't remember, is Scamp's Adventure, Lady and the Tramp 2.
I never saw that.
You never saw it, but you've got it on VHS.
Yeah, I've got it on VHS, but I don't think I've seen it.
See, I love that. I absolutely love that as a child, as a direct-to-DVD, direct-to-VHS thing. But that shows that... do you know that classic we had years ago that made us mint? Shall we just do like a half-hearted sequel and put it out on VHS and people scramble to get it? And we all know straight to DVD and VHS releases, it means one thing. It isn't going to be up to the calibre of anything else.
But I think the problem is as well, is it's just...
So taking those originals and then making them these live-action adaptations, they're going... These are masterpieces, okay, these are masterpieces. We can milk the teat of the success from nostalgia's sake and also new, introducing a new era. Listen, chums, if you want to introduce a new era to a certain property, defer to the original.
I think what frustrates me the most is the fact that it's milking the success of the original. But not just that, it's also the sense of... now that, you know, technology has surpassed expectations, let's be honest.
And it continues to.
And this is my frustration, because it feels like, here's the original, and when you look at it now, it's shitty. It's shoddy as hell. Because it's old. Because we haven't got the things that we've got now. We didn't have the things that we've got now. And this is what annoys me. It's like, we've got new technology now. Let's do it again.
Mm-hmm.
No, originals should be originals for original
sake. And it's
sake.
The same with the content. We are part of a culture now that is progressing, where it is cancellation culture. And I had a conversation with you and your mum about this a while ago. We're in a culture now that these classics are now coming with disclaimers saying some content is outdated. Okay, that's understood. I understand that application. And if you put that application to that original release...
If you are going to watch a film that is from the 1940s, you do not need a disclaimer. You use your brain and know that any views there are going to be outdated. You don't need something that says, disclaimer, some of the views on this are going to be outdated.
I feel the ridiculousness of that and how it is viewed. It is that reactionary thing, that fear thing. It's the same semblance of what we talked about in the wake of Blackface in the League of Gentlemen and Little Britain. The services are pulling them. That's basically you not saying we're being held accountable for putting something up that may be outdated or may be misconstrued. They're saying, we're taking it away so it doesn't exist anymore. You are perpetuating that issue. And I feel that's the same semblance of putting those disclaimers. Like, there was a disclaimer to a fucking Alien film. Some things are outdated. Excuse me? It's about a fucking alien on a ship.
It's sci-fi. It's space opera. It was never dated in the fucking first place.
The thing is, I much prefer, though, the disclaimers than Disney Plus trying to rewrite history and feed it into cancellation culture. I'll give them that. Thank you, Disney Plus. Because if we didn't have the accessibilities to Dumbo, You're missing out on something. It's a gem of a film. Yes, you may think the representation of black characters as those crows and such and all such and sundry, but that is a piece of time.
It's literally like saying, it's like apologising now for Back to the Future.
Mm.
Because we are in the year of, I can't remember which one it is, when they go to 2020 in Back to the Future. And that is like literally...
2012, yeah.
No, I'm pretty
sure it's 2020. Yeah, it's 2020.
And it's just like, okay, so you're going to put a disclaimer on that? I'm really sorry,
guys. It doesn't represent what 2020 is.
Exactly, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Are you going to put a disclaimer on the front? I'm really sorry, guys, but this is what we thought 2020 was going to look like.
Yeah.
But actually, we didn't involve the coronavirus pandemic, so sorry, disclaimer.
That is a really good point.
No.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, no. It was a film that was made way back.
Yeah.
You know that it was dated correctly for that time, so let it stay in that time.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. This is what I hate. Any originals now either have to be pulled or a disclaimer has to be put out because it might be outdated. Of course it was outdated. It was made in the 1940s, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what frustrates me. If you can't use your brain and say to yourself, I'm in 2020, this was made 60 years ago, I should use my noggin and connect the fact that different views were different then than they are now, then you don't deserve to be on this planet.
Yeah, it's, it's an interesting topic of discussion. It's, Although, like I said, it's a hit and miss thing. Like it is, for all of its worth, yeah. Guy Ritchie admittedly said at some point in an interview, though, well, what was the appeal for doing Aladdin? He went, well, first of all, the money, but also to make a film for my kids. And it's like, well, yeah, that's the emblem of it, be all, end all. Yeah. Luckily enough, someone like Guy Ritchie is creative and imaginative enough to do something and goes, and it's admitting of it, and goes, it can be seen as that, and it probably is, but I'm trying to infuse it with what I want. Beauty and the Beast, no, nothing was added, maybe technology, it wasn't that good. It was, and also I feel like if you're trying to do a real strict, like, shot-for-shot adaptation, which apparently Jon Favreau tried to do with The Lion King, I'm a little bit worried about that.
Mm.
Shot-for-shot. Well, what's the whole fucking point of creating it then? Also, they've done a remake of Lady and the Tramp, and that I personally didn't last longer than 15 minutes because the technology that is so better than the original is awful. It is shoddy. It doesn't look right. Pasting CGI features on the fucking dogs. Well, but we're using real dogs. We're just incorporating CGI. Don't fucking bother.
Either go full CGI or no CGI.
It's always about balancing act. If it's to do with the aesthetic, if it's to do with the tonality, if it's to do with the CGI. They're at a place where they are making a mint. There is a place where these live-action adaptations or reimaginings like Maleficent, they work. I really like Maleficent 1 because it wasn't trying to be Sleeping Beauty. It was being its own thing. Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland, that's much shat upon. I like it because he's doing his own thing with it.
Yeah.
Same with Alice Through the Looking Glass.
Yeah.
That is doing its own thing. It is not being beholden to what's come with Disney. It isn't.
This is the thing for me. You do an adaptation of a book, you can adapt it in any way you want. You know, you look at the Harry Potter films, for example, they're adaptation of the books. There are some parts of the books that are not in the films. Now, you've made a film with that, but you could also make a film of Harry Potter, which would be totally different from the originals, but including some of the bits that you didn't include before, because you have to pick and choose.
Yeah.
So, in my humble opinion, you can make an adaptation of a book which is the original.
Yeah.
Like the Jungle Book.
Yeah.
You can then make a second adaptation, but don't try and copy and improve upon the original, because the original was fine just as it is.
If you're not adding anything to warrant its reason of existence.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is why I think Mowgli by Andy Serkis is a really good film, because he says, it's nothing to do with Disney. I don't want to come off the success of that. I want to do my own thing with it.
Yeah.
And it's like, good. Okay. That's what I want to hear. Jon Favreau, in his own way, did say, oh, we're trying to make something different. But there is a distinguishing point. It's not.
It's exactly the same, just shitter.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But even though you enjoyed it.
I did enjoy it, yeah. But it's not as good as the original.
Yeah.
But because you just copied the original with some CGI
nipped and tucked it where you felt that it needed for a modern audience, yeah. It's curtailing and kowtowing to certain trends and stylings, but I'll give it 4 stars for what it is as a film. If, in retrospect, up against the original wins.
Yeah.
Rules out. If your initial reaction is, I will go to 2016's Jungle Book, oh, your kids do them better by them and just say, hey, sweetie, do you want to watch the Jungle Book? Yeah, the CGI one! No. The Jungle Book.
But they don't know.
No.
You want to watch the Jungle Book? Yes, please. Put on the original. Well, what do you do? They're not going to know the difference.
It's
not until they're older, anyway.
So, the Jungle Book from me, 2016, gets 4, and you?
I'll agree. I'll give it 4.
So, now, we need to talk about something, and it's not going to be the Mandalorian, because I think we need a little bit of breathing space between kind of shitting on Jon Favreau and then applauding Jon Favreau. We need to talk about a frozen elephant in the room. A frozen elephant in the room. We watched Frozen 2 for the first time together the other day. I didn't make that noise. Why did you assume I made that noise? I fucking loved this film.
Now, I said right before we did this podcast, I went, everybody is going to be absolutely flabbergasted that the female in the room is going to go, nope. And the male in the room is going to go, I loved it, I'm gushing about it, it gives me goosebumps.
It does. It did. I really like that. So that's kind of that's a nasty dig, man. It really touched me. It really gave me goosebumps.
That's okay. You can.
It made me cry, man.
You can punish me later.
It made me cry, man.
I'm going to give you my opinion before Zap goes into his full-blown...
Oh my God, it was so good.
Frozen.
Smell my sock.
Don't smell too bad.
It doesn't actually for a change.
Frozen was a good film. And this is the first one I'm referring to. Yeah, but just because your ex made you watch it loads doesn't mean you can shit on it.
No, I'm not shitting on it. I'm just going, I do like it. My favourite song from it.
That is not true representation of the film.
Well, I'll get sued otherwise. Let it go! Let it go! Oh, hold my hand. Okay, you go into it. Go.
Are you sure?
Yeah, go.
Because you don't shut up.
Go. You do know articulate warbling is articulate warbling. For a reason. Go for it, go.
So, Frozen, the original, the first one, I really, really enjoyed. It resonated with me, as it did for a lot of people, both adult and child. It was very important. It was really just pivotal, just for the time, for the... For everything.
It was all about
letting it go. And
sorry, the way you said that. It was like you were like conflicted about should I say that? Should I agree with that sentiment?
It was. It's about letting go. It's about not holding back anymore. And I'm singing the song without singing the song so I can't be sued. Okay?
The summation of the whole positivity of it is in the container within that song you're saying, sweetie.
I mean, I liked it my way. It's all about letting it go. It's all about not holding it back anymore. And it's actually making me want to go for a poo. Anyway. Look, I liked the first one. I did. I love Olaf. I just love him. I think he's fantastic. I think Sven's funny. I liked the whole... just the originality of... You know, Anna's finding this, you know, she's fallen in love with this guy and he's a bad guy and she shouldn't be falling in love with him and that thrill.
It should be Kristoff who's right there in front of her.
It should be that thrill of, you know, Elsa like basically almost kills her sister and what's going to happen, how's it going to... That is the originality for me of a Disney movie, of a kids movie, man. That is the epitome of a kids film. You've got bad bits... You know it's all going to end really well, and I just love it. And it gives me goosebumps thinking about it.
You mean bad bits as in bad guys, not bad bits of the scene?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I can agree, there's a lot of bad bits in that fucking film. Big Summer Blowout isn't one of them.
Shut up. The second one... I struggle. The songs are catchy, okay? Maybe not as catchy as the first ones.
Good.
But if I sing anymore... About
into the unknown.
Then I'm going to. It's just. It's so built around this culture of not offending anyone. There was nothing there to be thrilled about.
What do you mean?
Well, the only thing now that people can genuinely use to not be offended about is the elements of the world. Earth, water, fire.
No, I don't think they were leading on that.
Yes,
no.
They were leaning.
How? That's my hand.
You said I could talk and you'd shut up. They were leaning on the only thing that anybody can't be offended by. And the whole joke throughout the whole thing is the fact that Christoph wants to propose to Anna. And you know it's going to happen. And then the most frustrating thing is that they just kind of threw in there really quickly, oh, something's happened to Elsa, so Olaf is just going to disappear. That's how we know something's happened to Elsa. And it's just like we're just basically repeating a shittier version of the first one into the second one. So on that note, and I'm going to cut into Zach's explanation because he cut into mine, it is a 3-star film, should not have gone any further than the first one.
I did not cut into you that much.
You did.
Not that much. I didn't actually get to say, that's the whole thing of debate and conversation, you cut someone else down to give your reason, but...
So you don't cut them down.
I will cut you down.
You wait until there is a natural pause. I'm going to kick you in the balls so you can get that high note in a minute.
Right. Everything you said, I don't agree with. I think it is... The fire, air, water stuff elements is tantamount to Elsa realising her identity fully. She knows she's this ice cream, but she knows her place is greater
she's
in
an
this
ice
cosmos.
Cream.
Fuck off.
Oh, hang on a minute. You could take the piss out of my saying it, letting it go, but I can't take the piss out of her being an ice cream.
She is the ice cream queen of Mr. Whippy, no flakes, because it's
chocolate
extra cross.
Or vanilla?
I think it's vanilla with her hair.
Oh.
I mean, if she, like, dyed it, I think it would be chocolate. And if it was, like, a really patchy job, you could accuse it of being chocolate chip flavoured because it's only scattered about, so that would be the roots.
Well, what about when, like, in the first film, she, like, curses Anna and her hair has that white streak through it? Is that, like,
Neapolitan situation? Yes, it is!
Right, OK, cool.
So in the third film, she's going to literally have a Neapolitan.
She's going to be the Neapolitan
queen. I'm just waiting for Sven to piss on the on Olaf, and it's going to be like, ha, 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 I'm a piss icicle.
Can I just say, I'm really sorry, the best bit about this film, bar Olaf, which I love his character, is the little fire lizard.
Oh, yeah, one
he
of the elements.
He was the cutest little thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And the fact that when he was, like, all snuggling into Elsa's hands, I was like, oh, that's so cute.
Because he's the element of fire, and he's just, you wouldn't think that he's craving something to cool down. It's just funny. Those beats are,
yeah,
you know.
To be fair, he was cute.
Those beats, the beats of those films... It has a lot of them. I really understand what you mean that it's recycling the same narrative of the first one. There's
you
no.
Just said you disagree
no,
with
no, no, no.
I
understand. I understand.
For the record,
I understand. I'm not retracting anything. I'm saying, naturally, when it comes to old fairy tales, it's very cyclical. And when it comes to storytelling motifs, they do it deliberately. Now, I understand that this is going to be viewed as a cash-in and that they're going off the success. I don't think it is. I think they really felt within themselves, the creators, the writers, the directors, the musical troupe. The thing that bugs me about Frozen is it's not remembered for its storytelling. What you explained as to why it was such a great film, I absolutely agree. The film isn't notarised for that. It is only notarised for hitting the chart tops, for becoming a huge pop cultural phenomenon.
So why did they get Idina Menzel involved in the second one? If they didn't want the songs to just do the exact same thing?
No, because she is the singer of the first film. She is lending that suave of talent, that suave... That, you know, she is a powerful singer. She's also playing the character. She's also that name. She is now going to be notarised for the rest of her life, apart from the Wicked Witch of the West, or East, or South, whatever she was in Wicked. She's now going to be notarised as Elsa. If you've got a different actress, there would be riots in the streets. Now...
I get that. I do get that. But
they
you can't expect the songs
what
to
I
not
feel,
hit the charts if it's Idina Menzel.
No, but what I feel with this one, it's less about chart-topping. It wasn't their intention for the first movie. It wasn't. This is why it was a phenomenon. Because these songs hit in such a expansive, unrealised way... They did not go into this next one going, we need to top the first one. Their thing was about story, how to naturally progress it, and to give a little bit of finesse and conclusion to Elsa's story. The elements motif and scepter and theme of the thing, it goes in so beautifully. Also, I like that this one's a little bit more melancholic, a little bit darker, a little bit harsher. The music also is... it's taken on its whole other form in Frozen now. It's a joke in of itself. It is a marketing thing. It's a ploy. You can easily assign this speculative thought that it's cashing in. Yes, it is. But I feel that the creators in their hearts felt, whilst we are going to cash in and do a continuation, they spent their time. They didn't rush this out. They spent their time. A natural progression with the story. There is a conclusion. There are certain parts that are a bit skew-whiffy, granted. But I loved that. The spiritedness of it, the storytelling, it's rather cosmic, the fantastical elements, of which Frozen is embalmed in its own frozen slab as this iconographic thing in people's minds for the music and for the glitterati and all of the marketable stuff, all the short films that have born from it, from the ice skating sensation. This second one is a perfect continuation narratively. They tie up threads with the parent storyline. They just push it, and it's so beautiful and well-intentioned. The themes and the story and the emotion, it's something that kids can really relate to. The music is centred in story.
How the hell can kids relate to it?
There are themes, there are certain things. It's the same with any good piece of storytelling from Disney. Whether or not they know it, whether or not it is highlighted for them, or a Greek chorus is there for them to tell them how to feel, it is there in microcosms, in moments, to get a sense of loyalty, friendship, bravery, accepting your place here, but also being open to discovery, being open to change.
But did you not get all of that from the first one?
Yes, you did, but it was a natural. But it's a natural progression. It's doing something where I much prefer watch Frozen 2 trying to do something.
But it was rushed.
No, it wasn't.
I'm not saying the production was rushed. The film, the story.
Yes, I felt that. I felt that in places.
Because all of a sudden, it's really,
really
slow. You
need to get from point A to point B,
and
yes.
And they're playing charades, and it's all really cutesy.
Yeah, that stood out like a sore thumb to me, I'm not going to lie.
And it was really, really stupid. And then all of a sudden, it's like, right, Elsa hears this voice, and I don't really feel much conflict from her. Maybe a little bit, it's keeping her up at night.
I agree.
But there's not a lot of conflict from her. All of a sudden, she's like, I know you're not going to like this, Anna, but actually, I'm going to follow the noise.
I agree. Okay, I understand that. That scene was a terrible moment.
But it's not just that scene.
Been there, it didn't naturally progress for you. It was a little bit, it felt uncomfortable because it wasn't tonally in tune. Yes, it was out of place. Yes, there is a sporadicism about it. It is rather clipped and getting to the next beat, getting to the next part.
That's what I mean by rushed.
But I feel that in their hearts, they have not gone into this and half-heartedly tried to do a spin-off, knowing through the name, the succession, the overall. I feel the storytelling, the beauty of the animation, the intent of the music is so beautiful and it's so concrete. Not taken away from Frozen, but Frozen number one, it's known and notarised for being a bit of a joke now. And what they've done is naturally gone through. And their intention isn't we want to make the next chart topping. They just want to give a natural conclusion. I know they've done it for money. I know they have. I understand that. But I much prefer a movie with a lot of heart and good intention rather than, yeah, let's just fucking knock out another fucking sequel because we're going to make money from it. Like Pixar has done with their terrible prequel in the form of Monsters University. Like Cars 2. Cars 2 should not fucking exist.
Here are my issues. Charades.
It shouldn't be in there.
We hear this.
No, don't do it mockingly, because you admitted that it was so full. It gets to you. It goose pimples you.
No,
she
it
is
didn't.
Following this
no,
voice.
It didn't.
Oh, well, for me, you said it did, though.
No, I didn't. I said the first one gives me goosebumps. She's following this singing voice, okay? And I started to like the storyline around the fact that it could be her mum. Okay? I will admit, I did like that. But
you
then,
didn't like the predictability of it?
Well, kids'
you
films are predictable.
Well.
But, yeah.
Okay, so that's not an argument you're going with now.
It is and it isn't. It was over-predictable for me. But most kids' movies are, so you have to kind of give it a bit of leeway.
Yeah.
But here are my issues. Charades. She hears the voice and she sings about it. She sings about the fact that she doesn't want to follow it.
You wanted more conflict leading up before that song.
Then she just suddenly follows it. And then you kind of want some conflict where she's like, do I tell Anna? Don't I tell Anna? Do I? Don't I? Do I? Don't I? And in the end, she just kind of tells her. So that's cool.
She's forced to tell her because they're out of the village.
I get that. But then it's kind of like, well, Anna's like, well, I'm coming with you. There's no like, oh, I can't really go with you. Can I? Can't I? I need to. I can't. There's no conflict there at all. There's no yay, nay, not really sure thing. You can't follow it because it's like, right, I'm going to go and follow it. Okay, cool. I'm coming with you. Okay, cool. And then it's like, right, so she sees these diamonds and she's just like, ah, air, earth, wind, fire. Oh, it all makes sense. The father's story. Okay, cool. I can follow that. I can follow that narrative. Got it. She gets stuck in her own ice. In ice. How does that work? She is the ice queen. How does she then get stuck in ice? That doesn't
she's
make...
Trapped. She's trapped.
How
in...
can she be trapped?
She's trapped in this strange spherical sphere of time
but there, there
and
is,
relation.
But that's not what's explained.
It's not explained to you, but you get the sense
no,
of it.
No, you don't.
And that's why they you do can't... the Olaf thing, so they validate the she's in danger.
But you can't get her stuck in ice. She is the ice queen.
It was a different type of ice. It is more of a cosmic
barrier.
There
is no such
those,
thing as two different types of
those,
ice.
No, well, it's a fantasy world.
It doesn't matter.
They make that distinction. Everything doesn't need to be screamed at you. Also,
I don't need it to be screamed at me. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't need to be overly complicated by physics or reality.
It doesn't need to be overcomplicated, but what it does need to be is close enough to the truth. Otherwise, you lose the audience. Okay? And this is what happens to me, is you lost me because she gets caught in ice that she creates in the first place. How can an ice queen get stuck? That's like somebody being made of chocolate getting stuck in chocolate. It doesn't make sense to me. Hang on. Okay? Then the only reason why we know she's in mortal danger is by getting rid of Olaf. And he just goes like that. Oh, I'm flurrying away. Come off it. Olaf is funny. He is there for the humour. He is there for the character. He is not there to go, oh, I'm flurrying away.
But they're using that as a emotional thing to play with the audience.
I get that. But it's just a repetition of what happened before.
Yeah.
So then, all of a sudden, something happens. Bam! Elsa's all good. She realises she is the fifth element.
I like that.
I wouldn't have minded that if the narrative had gone to it in the right way. But we skipped. We jumped these little fucking rocks along the way.
Editorially, it is very scattershot. It is scatological.
It's awful.
I just think that the scenes that work well enough for me. And the thing is, reviewing this, talking to you, it makes me realise how much reverence I actually have for Frozen. So me, like, mock style, mocking you about liking Frozen. No, I do love that film. I do appreciate it. That did have a good consistency, continuity and actual storytelling devices.
It made sense. I can't deny that the animation of the second one is absolutely phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Because it is. And when you compare it to the original, my God, has it changed in those very few years when you look at it like that.
Cinematographically, like light and
water. If we were looking at something from 60 years ago, then you'd go, of course the animation has changed. But because it's been such a short amount of time, I can absolutely appreciate the animation's changed. And I can appreciate the idea of Elsa finally finding that she's a part of these elements, these world elements that set
uniting
up...
Uniting these people,
yeah,
that
set out
the
that
are
life.
Trapped within the woodland.
But the thing is it just...
It doesn't go about doing it in such a way that feels justifiable or coherent.
And this is the thing. I feel like if you're going to make a film, you need like a straight line to where you want to be, okay? Yeah. And you kind of do some hopping between the stones, but in general, you keep to a general line of where you're going to go with this. And it felt very much like it's hop, hop, hop. Hang on a minute. We haven't explained it to ourselves. Quick, throw in something that they'll understand
exposition,
from the last one.
Yeah.
And then keep going. And this is the thing. Towards the end, it was just rushed. Olaf flurries away. This is how not poignant it was. I can't even remember how Elsa was freed. Okay? She's freed.
Destroying the dam.
Oh, yeah, of course. Because that makes
based
sense.
Based up on a broken promise of her grandfather.
The water...
That did wrong to the initial agreement.
Okay,
it's very spiritual, this film.
Okay, so the water stops the fog. The fog lifts.
It frees Elsa. Get that? I think that makes sense.
She has one with the elements now.
That makes sense. That's fine. The forest is free. That's fine. I'm with you. I've got it, okay? She stands in the middle and it turns into a snowflake. So her being in that middle bit is the creation of the overall snowflake, which shows all of the elements in this world, in their world, whatever else. But it's just... There was no... For me, personally, there was no stakes like there was last time.
Yeah, because that is like the first initial story. It's the first time you're seeing these characters go through those stages.
Yeah.
And I understand that being repetitive in nature and quite cyclical in the sequel, it is rather... You've done this already. How are you expecting me to take this seriously?
The last time...
I think if they actually did away with Olaf, I think it would have been a little bit more...
Yeah, maybe. I'd be gutted, but sure. The thing is, in the first one, we are following Anna, really, and not Elsa.
Mm-hmm.
And we are following her being saved, aren't we?
Mm.
Because she is cursed by her own sister. And that is something that is dark, but both beautiful, and it creates lessons for children to learn. And this is the thing. I love that, but it just feels like it's a repetitious money-making machine trying to do it all over again.
I do understand that, I do. I think I'm just coming from it in a side of, because Frozen's such a gentrified viewed thing now, it's kind of a joke in of itself and how it's viewed and reciprocated and acknowledged in pop culture and in general. What I liked about Frozen 2 was it wasn't trying to be distinctive in any other way apart from just trying to do well by telling a natural progression of the story. I understand all the points you're making. I do. I completely do. But I'm just got to say, I still just love this film. I really love this film. Maybe I need to rewatch Frozen 1.
I'm not here to change your mind. And I'm not here to try and convince you to hate it like I do. Well, I wouldn't say hate. That's a bit of a strong word. But what I can't understand is people get so... And I think you may be part of this. You may not. People get so tied under this kind of... loyalty to something that I can't really be sure what you're loyal to when the story isn't quite right anyway.
Loyalty? What loyalty do you think I have?
To this continuation of a story. It's not a continuation, it's a repetitious thing for me.
They've concluded it in a beautific manner, though it may have been messy and shoddy and editorially all over the gaff. The intent and...
But at the end of Frozen 1, did you sit there and go, they need to do a sequel to finish this story?
No, definitely not.
But that's what I'm saying to you. It's not a continuation to finish the story because the story had been finished. That is my opinion.
Well, I had a sense that they were going to do a sequel.
I knew they were going to do a sequel. Of course they're going to do a sequel because it's all about the dollars. But what I'm saying to you is at the end of Frozen, you didn't go, oh my God, that was such a cliffhanger, what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
You came to the end of it and went, oh, what a lovely story.
Oh, to be honest, in my own mind, I really wanted her to be pitted against a volcano, man. I really wanted that. I really wanted her to be pitted against the elements in a more harsh, brutal, personal manner.
I wasn't fearful for the characters against...
But you don't, because you know it's so rather clichéd and moot.
Well, the thing is, though, and this is the thing, the only time I felt fearful was the fire, but then it ended a bit quick.
And it turns out to be a cute...
And it turns out to be a cute little lizard. Now, I like that storyline, I did, but it's just the fact that it happens too quickly. It's like, oh my God, there's fire, but it turns out it's a really cute lizard, so it's cool. And then it's like, oh my God, it's Earth. But actually, they're actually quite cool, these weird Earth human things. Which, by the way, reminded me so much of... what is the name of the film? And they break in. And it's like scientific... crap. It's like they're doing scientific things and then they break into this, like... cage, and inside is what just looks like land, and it turns out all this land is actually just rocks, and they start standing up and helping each other. What is that film? They run into like a science lab that isn't being used
Pikachu?
Anymore.
Detective Pikachu.
That's what I didn't see. This is the thing, I felt like it was copying it. Detective Pikachu, they run into this science lab, they break in through this glass, and they just think it's land. Oh, there's nothing scary in here, and the land stands up. And it's like, it just fit for us. Oh, seen this before.
Well, you can say that Detective Pikachu copied The Hobbit. They did that.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. I hadn't seen The Hobbit, so I'd say the same about that.
These rock creations are mythological. They have been around for years.
I get that, but I'm not scared of them.
And we need to have a little bit of fear of these things.
No,
we need to be like, no, oh no,
no, I never felt that either. But the thing is, I don't think they're really there to do that.
But they are though, because at minor moments, running from them.
They do. There's a lot of red herring, Trojan horse things going on here that they make you believe that you should be scared when you're not, and then they undercut it. I understand that. Anyway, we can sing till the cows come home. We can talk till the cows die and become chowder. I really love this film. I really love it. I understand completely where you're coming from. I really do. But I still... I won't take away. I was just picked up. And lately, I've been struggling to be able to let it go, per se. And
you just said let it go.
And be taken away. And it was pure escapism for me. And I've got to give it 5 stars still. I loved it.
I think you've got to watch it again when you're in a less child mood.
I wasn't in a child mood. It just took me and just picked me up and I just escaped for 106 minutes. Why, do you think that I generally will watch it again and go, oh, that's really shit?
I don't think you'll watch it again and think it's really shit. I just think you'll realise that you're having a bit of a bad day.
But what if it's not the case? Why is it bad that I like this film?
It's not. But what I'm saying to you is the fact that because you were having a bad day, you were struggling to concentrate, and this took you away, doesn't make it a good film. It just means that that film is the one that managed to take you away.
Exactly, and I've got to give it that credit.
But you don't know that's going to be the same the next time you see it.
It could do.
It could do, but it could not.
Well, either way. Now, what are we going to go on to? Oh, yeah, Mary Poppins Returns. Oh. Watch 20 minutes of it. Shit.
Don't mind me review.
You said it. You said 3 stars, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
You did. You said it was a 3-star film.
I didn't.
You did. You listened back to this episode. You said it was a 3-star film.
I can't wait, you guys, until we listen back to this episode and you guys listen to it and realise I didn't say it was a 3-star film. But
how
anyway,
many stars will you give it?
Well, 3 stars. Now you give me the opportunity to say it. Thank you very much.
Why are you getting so arsey?
Because you won't let me review it.
What do you mean I've not let you review it?
Well, I mean, give it my star rating. Rate it. That's what I meant.
Oh, I only paid them past because I thought you'd already given it. You said that's what makes it a 3-star film.
Yeah, but at the end...
Okay, what rating would you give Frozen 2?
I've just said 3 stars.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer.
That's your final answer. Right, what next?
Mandalorian. I haven't got much to say about this, to be honest, because I've got no prior knowledge or loyalty to anything, really. I like Star Wars. Zach said, let's watch The Mandalorian. I went, yeah, okay. Been putting it off for a little while because I wasn't really that bothered. It was a nice story. It frustrated me that it was directed by different people for each episode or chapter because I felt like you weren't going to get the full benefit. I think you could get a better benefit if... Taika Waititi actually did all of it.
No, I really like that they have different directors because it's their own little mini movie.
I get that, but the problem is when we watched the sixth one, it was awful.
It wasn't that good, but I think that's duly down to the actors they cast. And the handling of the material.
Not in its entirety. I think it's still got something to do with the directors as well.
But he directed one of my favourites, the third episode, Rick Famuyiwa. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I loved the story. I loved the continuing unfolding of mythology. I love that Dave Filoni is on board as a creative head. I love the Western aesthetic. I love the ode. I love that we get to see environments and vehicles and iconic Star Wars things and see people in certain predicaments and situations that you never have before. Also, Bryce Dallas Howard directed another one of my favourite episodes. I've really got to give her credit for this.
I like her, man. I do like her.
Her episode features a walker and there's this village that is raided and they get the Mandalorian and his friend Kara, who eventually meets and they become good pairing. And the walker in Star Wars, it's kind of the vehicles and the machines and spaceships, they're there for one reason, to get blown up, aren't they?
Yeah.
There's no stakes. There's no form of atmosphere. There's no form of... You never feel the you look at it and go, that's a fucking cool design. Oh, look, it blew up. Oh, that's a really good, concept. You never actually feel any form of fear. You never feel any of the stakes. You never feel the situation.
And I think as well, for me, as somebody that has watched Star Wars, you know, I've come in very late. It's really hard for me to figure out which spaceships belong to who, and whether they're bad guys or good guys. And the only way I can ever figure it out is the colour of the gunfire, the, what do they call them, blasters. What comes out of the blaster is the only way I know who's bad and who's good.
And certain designs.
Well, yeah, so I know that the
Imperial Army and Stormtroopers, it's very...
Yeah, so you know the spaceships that have got, like, the... Like the hexagons on the side with the circle in the middle. I know.
What, the X-Wings?
What?
The X-Wings. The good guy fighters. No. Oh, you mean the...
Kylo Ren flies.
Imperial,
the one that Darth Vader flies. And then the one at the end where he flies.
Basically, the villain ship.
Yeah. I get that. Those little ones. I know they're bad guys, okay? But all the rest, I look at a spaceship, I'm like, are you a good guy or you're a bad guy? I haven't got a fucking clue. So it's just that actually, it's quite nice to go into a bit more depth in The Mandalorian as to who's what.
Yeah.
And why.
Yeah.
And
they
how.
I do.
Because this is the thing, all I know is the one with the hexagons with the round bit in the middle is a bad guy. Yeah. That's the only one I know.
They do that in a really good way, but there is always that, like that thing of who is really the good guy, who is really the bad guy, but I understand what you mean with that. Sometimes they don't do it specifically. And also, it's just a molasses of designs and images just flashing. What I liked about it was concise, it was clear, beautifully shot. I liked that it had a through line, what everyone's calling Baby Yoda. I'm just going to refer to him as he is, the child. I really liked that introduction. I like the notion that they introduce a force healing in this. That is all, that it's done more naturally and right than they did in The Rise of Skywalker.
And what I like about it as well is the fact that he's getting to know his Jedi powers, and actually we don't see a lot of development, even with Anakin Skywalker, with his development of the Jedi. It's kind of... of that
only
power.
If you watch the Clone Wars, you do, but you don't. You're just going from the film.
From the film.
Which everyone, general audiences are.
Yeah, if you look at the films, you see Anakin is really, really powerful, but we don't really know how.
No, yeah.
He's just good at racing those...
Pod races, yeah.
Pod race things.
He's got good senses, yeah.
He's got good senses.
And he's like, a good pilot, yeah.
And it's like, okay. And then all of a sudden, he gets taken on. He has a master now. And then he's like the darkest lord ever.
Mm.
And that frustrates me because you don't actually see any development of that power.
Yeah.
And that's the same all the way through the films for me. So actually The Mandalorian really shows how Baby Yoda, or the child, actually starts to experiment. He knows he's got some form of power. And and it's a fact that on a number of occasions he's gone to try and... And I'm like pretending to try and touch Zach right now, thinking that you can all see us. Like... But yeah, he like goes to touch to
on
heal
many occasions.
On quite a few occasions,
and
he gets pushed away.
Yeah.
And actually, it's that realization that he's trying to experiment with those powers that he has.
And he's a baby, even though he's 50 years old. He's a baby.
And I love that fact that like when he lifts up that horn,
where he had to get the egg to give to the little worm.
And it's the fact that he lifts it up, and he's like, "I can do this, I can do this," and it's so frustrating because we know as an audience. He's young.
Yeah.
He's not going to have as much power as Yoda does.
And
you know you're going to be like, crap, the Mandalorian, he needs to kill this creature because Yoda's not going to be able to hold him for much longer.
No.
And we know that, but they don't. And it's and that's the thing. It's stakes, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's just like,
and
actually...
And you always see that that's the thing. He is always drained and goes into a comatose state.
And the fact that he just goes to sleep afterwards and you're like, oh, he's just so cute.
It's beautiful.
He's lovely.
Also, I love that from the off, though, the Mandalorians have a strict creed and a strict... you know,
it's like a code, isn't it?
A code.
Yeah.
But what I love is that people are under the assumption Mandalorians are bounty hunters. They are part of the scum and villainy side of things. This guy, this Mandalorian, this Mando, he has morals. He has a centre. And the beautiful storytelling of this is... it's about fatherhood.
Yeah.
It's about childhood. It's about family. creating a family where there isn't one.
And it makes you realise as well, for me personally, how why Yoda is as kind as he is because actually he's been through some really difficult times, but he's always had somebody to look up upon and say, actually, like, you know, I will protect you and that kind of thing, which is why I feel like Yoda's got, like, the best advice, and he's, like, the nicest, one of the nicest characters, because although he's kind
it's
of...
It's not actually Yoda, though.
But it is.
No, it's not.
But because he's baby
this is
Yoda.
Set up, no, this, no, he's the same species.
But he's still baby Yoda.
Yeah, but he's not Yoda. Yoda's dead.
No, he's not.
This is after Return of the Jedi, 6 years after Return of
Are
the Jedi.
Are you sure?
Yes, it is.
So what? Why is there a sudden... Baby Yoda that...
This is the whole crux of the story, because we don't know the species. We don't know the species of him. This is why everyone's so damn... Because he is taken, basically, from one of the most powerful Force users ever. The wise man that you just described, the powerful man that he is. That's why everyone wants him, because he's a Force user. This is in the wake of Luke Skywalker's triumph. That's why throughout they refer to it as the Revolution... And that's why stormtroopers are all segmented and hired out
well,
privately.
I don't like it anymore.
Why? Did you actually think it was Yoda?
Yeah. Why else would you? Why else would they put on a TV program that?
Because he's a little version.
That doesn't
of Yoda.
Make any sense to people that just watch the films. Anybody that doesn't
but
sit.
I thought you knew that. I explained some of it to you.
No, because I don't know what films what.
I told you it was 6 years after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, but I don't know which one the Return of the Jedi is. That's what I keep saying to you. I don't know the names of the films.
It's after that the Empire's been destroyed.
But what I'm saying to you is people that just watch the films
yeah,
are
easily,
not going to know
get
that.
Easily confused.
So
yeah.
Why did they do it? That frustrates me. Not everyone...
Did you think this was set when?
I
way
don't
before
know.
Yoda?
Well, yeah, but then it doesn't quite make sense because of the people and the kind of... But then none of it really makes that much sense, does it? So, yeah. Like, the era it's set in.
You're pissed off because you just had a real compelling thing you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, well, I can still use it and say it's genetics because he must have come from something to do with Yoda.
Well, it is the thing, but that's also the thing. But the point you were making, anyway, is still validated because you can understand a little bit more of where Yoda... What, I think it's that these creatures, these alien species, are naturally born of the Force, are naturally born and are part of that reality. And you can see from this little creature, depending on where he is, where that type of mannerism and that where that type of tradition and that type of that soulfulness or that Yoda was or still is because he's an immortal Force ghost. So that still is relevant to it. But when you started saying Yoda, Yoda, I'm like, whoa, 1 minute. It's not actually Yoda, baby. But going from that, I think what Bryce Dallas Howard and Taika Waititi taking one of the Separatist droids viewed in the prequels, or the later prequels, Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, the big broody ones, they're actually states you actually see on the ground... The fear and what a force of nature these machines and these droids actually are. Whereas in Star Wars, the films, they're kind of the cannon fodder. Also, they're there to have a few jokes. They're just there for the lightsabers
to cut down. Yeah.
So when Taika, because I was sitting there going, who the fuck directed this prologue? I was like, the flashbacks. I mean, when I say prologue, I mean the about the Mandalorians, Jin's background, Carlo and Din's. Can't get his name out of my mouth. It's just interesting to see. Like, we don't really see it on the ground. As much as people say, oh, they really showed the war in Star Wars and Rogue One. Yeah, it's still about blowing things up. There's no stakes. Also, Taika Waititi, man. I mean, the guy just... He can direct. And also, he can always get his semblance of humour. Also, the opening, the prologue to the final ever episode where the stormtroopers are just rinsed... Because
yeah,
of their terrible...
No, I do like that.
Done in that really clever manner that Taika Waititi can do, where he's just like going, well, we know these guys can't aim for shit, so let's make
yeah,
a...
it's just funny.
Let's execute a scene where they're actually aiming for something, and they're missing, and they're looking at the gun, shaking it, and you went, oh, yeah, as if it's the guns, dude. It's fucking you. Laura's like, yeah, it ain't the fucking blasters. It's you, dude. Come on. And Taika is really good with that. He's really, really good with that. The through line through this is Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau. Dave Filoni more so. He is the think piece. He is the natural extension of Lucas and carry on that legacy in the story. He is so laid back. He is so nice. He is so humble. And he is just about creating and evolving. And I think the best Star Wars stories that have come, Clone Wars and what that is coming out, is from Dave Filoni. Also, due respect to Jon Favreau, who had his hand in each episode and kept a through line. Yes, there were a few episodes where a little bit... I understand that necessity. I know what you mean by saying you need one director for a certain thing. Do you know what I know? I think that if this was a larger series... Get a certain director for a certain... because, you know, in big series, you have numerous storylines and you have, like, multiple partners. I understand. Have one director for those segments and then get another one in for the next step in the story. I like what they did by getting these different directors to do different episodes because it infuses it with a different sensibility. Their own isolated movies, and I just think...
I can appreciate that, I truly can. However, it runs the risk of fucking up a specific episode, and I nearly completely lost all interest after six.
Yeah, six.
I was so bored.
Mm.
I was like, this is boring as hell. And the worst thing is for me, it's like, after six, I was like, I just don't think I can anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, I can't... If it's going to be as shit as six, it's been so good up to six. One to five has been really good. Six is shy. If it's going to be shit all the way through to the end, I don't want to watch
you
it
have
anymore.
This is the thing. You have to give it some leeway. You have to forgive it. It's trespasses. And
yeah,
you did.
And I did. But it's that fact that that could have completely ruined it for
exactly.
a lot of people.
And the thing is, with something that is such a... It is a mini-series. Such a short in consideration. Yeah. But... The strengths what come from this benefits from it being a long-form thing
mm-hmm.
when it comes to stakes, when it comes to knowing characters, when it comes to looking at things in a broader sense. You get more things, like when it comes to the powers of the little creature that looks like Yoda, the child. Because we have that length and that time and space to show the growing sense of his powers, we couldn't get with Anakin. But we, luckily enough, we do get it in the Clone Wars. So if you're a Star Wars fan and you're going, Laura's wrong! She isn't wrong, because your general appropriation of it is, I've watched these nine films and the other spin-offs, I'm coming into The Mandalorian with that knowledge of those films.
Yeah,
just those
virgin,
films
really.
Alone. Yeah, a Star Wars virgin. Like, not everyone is on top of it Star Wars-wise. Me, myself, I'm not on top of it Star Wars-wise.
Yeah, but you know more than I do. But the thing is what I'm saying is general audience may well have just seen the films, might want to give The Mandalorian a try and don't understand
it
in the slightest.
Understand any of it,
no, I didn't.
If in all honesty.
I
try to give you as much
yeah,
background
and I do
as
appreciate
possible.
That, but what frustrates me is you need... it's hard because it just feels like they are catering purely to the people that have got the... time, effort, energy to look into these things that I haven't got the time, effort and energy to look into. Do you see what I mean?
Well, I've got at least 20 years on you when it comes to Star Wars stuff.
Yeah, but it's not just that. It's just the fact that, like, they're just catering purely to the absolute avid fans. And actually, I think they could make it much better if they just gave a bit of an explanation in between.
They could do that.
All they needed to do, right, is do... You know the start of every Star Wars film has the little intro?
Mm.
All they needed to do was do that for The Mandalorian. It may be in a different way because it's not exactly the same. It's not a Star Wars movie.
Mm.
But all they needed to do was that. And just to give a little bit of background as to what The Mandalorian is and what the you know, it's not Yoda, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Just because it just feels like it's like... I feel like I've been segregated... Okay, bear with me on this one, humour me. I've been segregated because I've watched the films, I like the films, okay?
Mm.
And I'm going into The Mandalorian going, well, I like Star Wars films, so why wouldn't I like The Mandalorian?
Mm.
I've come out going, don't really get it. But it was a good series, I can appreciate
yeah.
it for what it was. The thing is, what they've done is they've catered purely for the people that know far more than what the films have ever given them.
Yeah.
And then I feel like, it's just like, well, you're not enough of a fan, so whoppy-pop. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
That is an issue.
Because it's just like, well, actually, so I'm not good enough for you because I haven't got the time to sit on Facebook to sit on the internet all the time to go, what's the true story of Star Wars? I haven't got that time. I haven't got the time to, you know, for those of us that are, you know, even that it doesn't even, it's not even specific to like working or anything, is it? It's like mums that are stay-at-home mums and looking after their kids all the time. They haven't got time. So sitting there going, oh, really? It's not actually Yoda? Do you see what I mean? For those of us that haven't got the time to research the background...
They need to give a little bit
of yeah, and it just feels like it's like, actually, if you haven't had the time to research it, you're not enough of a fan, move aside. This is only for a really minority group, and I don't like that. That really...
I don't think that's their intent, but that's how it comes across.
Yeah.
It is. I'm not going to deny that.
I mean, I'm not saying that was absolutely what they were thinking. They were thinking this is only for these people. But that's how it feels, because I don't know. anything unless I sit and research it. And but I haven't the got the chance
is,
to do that.
But the thing is if you want to, if you're compelled enough, you will.
No, I don't think it is.
I think it is. And if not, just watch the special features and listen to Dave Filoni explain Star Wars. I mean, God, I love that man.
But it just frustrates me that if I haven't got the time, or quite frankly, the inclination to research...
Do you know my big nitpick with it?
What?
It felt like it... I know it's a great big galaxy and it's having that Western aesthetic, that old 19 spaghetti Western man with no name thing. It's picking off of great old classic samurai films like Kurosawa, all the things that inspired George Lucas and certain characters, and it's going off of that, and it is like a real grounded, on in the sands, in the grit story. I got a little bit bored of the repetitiveness of being stuck on a desert planet. We're in a galaxy far, far away. Can we please have a galaxy that isn't just pitted in sand? I understand the necessity for it and what they're going. Please don't try and shit on me or I'll do this. Anyway.
Did you just follow through?
No, I didn't follow through. I just farted.
It was very close. like, I was there and that was like pure... It was like fear
in your eyes.
In my face. I was like, uh-oh, I'm going to have to do the rest of this podcast alone while Zach's like, no!
My point was made, though!
Run into the toilet with his legs, like, half open, half closed, not quite sure what to do with himself.
Dripping
like,
down my leg.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, it's... I didn't like that notion, but I like that it took things that, you know, on a stylistic level, we've always acknowledged and go, huh, that's cool, blow it up. There's actual feeling of fear. There's a bit... I think it's because of the time given... It's the time given over, it's the execution of it, and it's the directors, and it's that time. Also, it's probably also the confidence of the filmmakers. Also, the recognition that these droids really aren't a force of nature. They're actually quite pitiful.
Yeah.
We need to re-personify this. Yeah. And I like that the pinnacle of the story with the Mandalorian is he hates droids. He's got this deep seething hate for droids because a droid killed his family. You can totally understand that. And also seeing a prequel designed robot, you know, used in such a fashion where you're actually scared of it. It's not making a joke or a fucking pun.
Yeah.
Not to take away from George Lucas. I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to do that balancing act. But I like
but
that.
But he does it well, but I think the thing is with this, you know, this droid that turns into a nursing and protective droid.
Oh, the IG unit.
The fear that I had, it's like, don't you fucking kill that baby.
You said it throughout the episode. You still didn't trust it.
No, I didn't trust it because it's like.
You were with Mando,
weren't
you?
Yeah, I was because it's like, well, I don't know because he used to be a fighter. So what is it? Or a hunter, whatever they called him. It's like, well, what are you going to be now? And it did. It instilled fear in me because I'm like, I don't like this. I don't trust him.
And that poetic, almost pseudo. I love the balance of tone. Like, though it's a soulful that character, I have spoken. I loved him.
I did like
Nick Nolte. He was a grounded character, a very hopeful character. The encapsulation in a lot of ways of what Star Wars is about. You can change your stripes. You do make mistakes, but you can be a good person by your deeds. And he rebuilds this droid in a lot of ways from being a killer supremo who, if he can't get his catch, he's just going to self-destruct and fucking take you away with him anyway. And he goes to kill the little child. And then Mando, it's the start of his journey where he takes him out and he's like, you know what, this morally isn't right. And as much as he tries, and he's at a place, and there's so much going on when it's to do with the Mandalorian armour and the Creed. All that stuff is really interesting, and I think what they did with that, the Mandalorian myth type stuff, I think it's a good introduction for those who aren't as aware.
Yeah.
But what I really liked about the notion of taking this droid that's be all end all's purpose is a killer. I am a nurse droid and I am here to protect you. Would you like a cup of tea? It's subverting expectations, but there's still that fear. But doing something like that, and through the nature of that character that Nick Nolte plays, does the voice of, he just gives so much wisdom and weight. And he's not someone who wants a lot of life. He just wants his freedom. And if he feels in this guy he needs to help people, it's just, this is the most Star Wars-y thing you ever watch. Thematically, visually, character-wise, it's the emblem of everything that may have been lost in certain films or certain entries. I love it. It's sensational. I would say that the first five episodes are 5 stars. I'd say 6 is 2.5. It really is that bad. And then after Taika Waititi's last episode is that just
spot on,
hits the mark. Yeah. And this is why Taika's been hired to do his own Star Wars film. Taika Waititi, who, hilariously, way before any of this, threw shade at Kathleen Kennedy and her tendency for hiring and firing directors. It was in the wake of the whole Solo stuff and criticism aimed at this and that. And he put out on Twitter, I don't want to be hired for a series that I'm going to be fired 2 weeks after getting the job. And all of a sudden, he's working with them.
Yeah.
But what I like about this is, Kathleen Kennedy isn't a serpent. She isn't the serpent everyone tries to make it out to be. She's trying to do the best with what she's got.
Yeah.
She's trying to keep true to this. And what she's done is she's given the reins to Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, and she says, I trust you with this. I've got the fucking films to worry about. And that's why it succeeded. She has taken too much upon herself, I feel. She's juggling so many plates. So anyone who's going out and saying, she's got a feminist agenda, grow the fuck up. This woman is trying to do something for you guys. Continue Star Wars. Without Kathleen Kennedy, there is no continuation of Star Wars. She was the person who stepped out and said, I think Star Wars needs to come back. And I am so glad that Kathleen Kennedy is the head of Lucasfilm and all associated. And I think a lot of people don't give her enough credit, saying, cut the head off the serpent and then she'll go. Fuck off, you poisonous, toxic wankers. You think that her whole idealism is feminism? And even if it is, good for her. She wants to give more work to women? Let her. If she wants more creative control in women's hands? Let her. Star Wars is not an all-male thing. It is universal. And this is what? You're a fan of Star Wars, a real fan? It is not about one certain thing. It is not about one certain ethnicity. It is about everyone. Everyone's rights, everyone's being, and their hope for life and what they want to do out of their lives. It is about more than just you and your petty fucking politics and your minorities. Star Wars is universal, it is galactical, it is epic, and it's not just one thing. And you can't be fucking spoilt brats just because you're not getting what you want. Granted, I've been one to shit on how everything's been handled with The Rise of Skywalker, but I will never ever point my finger at Kathleen Kennedy, because that is just a very, very, very weak point to start. It's a pot shot. It's a weak point. There is no concrete, there's no validity or foundation upon you pointing fingers at her. Without Kathleen Kennedy, you wouldn't have The Mandalorian, but you're not moaning about that now, are you? Or are you? Because Bryce Dallas Howard and Deborah Chow are one of the probably reigning directors alongside Taika Waititi of this series. Get off your soapboxes, or I hope the soapboxes splinter and they just pop a main artery and you bleed out, you absolute cunts. On a Disney episode, I said the C word. Anyway, overall, wrap it up. Are you interested in watching Mandalorian Season 2?
Yes.
Me too. Carl Weathers is great. Gina Carino. Love the lady. She is... I am so happy that the people behind this creatively have given her a role, an acting role.
Mm-hmm.
One that is not just subjugated upon her being a strong woman. me and Laura had a really interesting conversation earlier, a distinctive thing about hard women not needing to act hard, whereas Michelle Rodriguez was striving to be this Miss Kisno one, and then later on as she evolved in her career, she kind of was like, I don't need to put on this tough exterior act. It is enough just to me to perform. So yeah, I think this is going to be the wrap up of our Disney Plusified episode. I just recommend you go watch The Mandalorian. Star Wars fans or not, heed what Laura says. It is going to be a difficult one. But if you have someone like me or a partner who is a little bit more versed in Star Wars, just say to them, honey, can you fill me in a bit? I did try to fill Laura in as much as possible. Whether or not she wanted to hit listen or I gave her the right amount of information, that's on me. But anyway, we are going to go, and I don't know, I don't even know what the time is.
It's 20 to 9.
So, that's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.
And we hope you enjoyed this Disney Plusified episode. And we are going to go right now.
They're gone. I heard it with my own two ears. Thank you so much for listening to Articulate Warbling with Laura and Zach. Their part is recorded in Brighton, England. My part is recorded in Portland, Oregon. And that's also where it's edited and distributed from. Thank you so much. And tell your friends about it. Join us on Facebook. Check out Zach on Instagram as Sweat Drenched Rit. Check out Sweat Drenched Press online, wherever you find websites. And learn more about reading at your local library. Siri, play Frozen theme song. Full volume.